Welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, everybody. Thanks for coming back to join us today. This is Stacy from the U.S. at Focused Fun, and with us we have...
Hey, it's Ness from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia. And very exciting times today. We have a new member of the team. Her name is Sarah, and I shall let her introduce herself.
Hi everybody, this is Sarah McLaren. I'm from the UK and I run Separation Anxiety Solutions, and I'm super excited to be here.
Yay! Hey, we're super excited for you to be here.
Absolutely, yeah. So Stacey, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about prescription medication and the role that they play with helping your dog overcome separation anxiety.
I think that's something we have to talk about before we talk about them is a couple of other things. One of them is people's objections to giving their dog prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. So I made a little list of some of the objections that people have. Some of them fear that their dog's personality will change and maybe even become a zombie. Obviously, this isn't the goal. We want to take a layer of anxiety off without them changing their personality. And if that does happen, then perhaps the dosage of the medication or the type of medication needs to be changed. Others object by saying that drugs are unsafe. Hopefully there's going to be some blood screening, that the vets know what they're doing, the drugs have been tested properly. Others are worried about pets being sleepy all the time. Again, this could be a case of reviewing the medication, tweak if that does happen, tweaking the dosage, and again, maybe if that medication is the incorrect one, changing the medication, and again, making sure the dosage is correct.
And another one with that one is that sometimes, especially with the daily medications, which we'll kind of get to the different kinds of medications, but especially with the daily medications, sometimes that initial kind of loading time while the medication is getting into the system, there are some temporary unattended side effects like increased sleepiness, decreased appetite, increased thirst.
Yes.
But those things can be very temporary. So that's kind of another thing to look at.
Yeah, that was the last one I was going to mention, the side effects that can be associated with medication. Again, they may be temporary, or it could be a case of tweaking the dosage or the medication, just that they need reviewing because, getting it right. Every dog's different, so what is appropriate for one dog might not be appropriate for another dog.
Well, and one of the things for me is that I think a lot of people overlook when trying to look at the side effects is, what is the side effect of chronic stress on a dog system, right?
Yes, yep.
So that can have long-lasting health effects,
mm-hmm.
Decrease the life expectancy of your dog is certainly a welfare issue. So especially with dogs that have kind of confounding factors to separation anxiety, whether that's hyperattachment or maybe they have general anxiety or are reactive to dogs, other dogs and strangers, and they have, kind of anxiety coming from multiple places, I think we really do need to think about chronic stress there.
Mm. I think one thing we should talk about in terms of medication too is why one might give medication and how it has to go hand in hand with the training as well. So mm-hmm. It's all very well giving a dog medication and it's all very well training a dog without medication. But if you have to, if the dog's level of stress is so high, then working hand in hand with a vet or a vet behaviorist is so important to facilitate the training.
I think you make a good point there as well about the drugs going hand in hand with the training. And I think that's also a good thing for people to go to their vets with, because quite sometimes vets can be a little reticent to prescribe drugs if they think that the owner's just going because they want drugs to, because they do want them to become a zombie, or they do want them to become sleepy and not worry about the training. But I think for a lot of vets, if they know that you're also working with a trainer, they're more likely to prescribe the right medication because they're more likely to get a good outcome.
So what do you all think about using medications? Is that something that people should think of as a last resort or kind of on the front end? What are your thoughts about that?
For me, I mean, I don't promote medications with my clients. I'm very open-minded about it, but because I'm a small animal naturopath and because I do like the natural kind of side of things in terms of, you know, just healthy dogs in terms of like their diet and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not talking about natural supplements. I think we should talk about that later, or mm-hmm. natural options. But in terms of medication, I don't push my clients, but I also say to them that they should talk to a vet about it, and they, or especially a vet behaviorist, if they can A, afford it, and B, get hold of one, because they're, in Australia, apparently, I had one lady contact me and said it was 3 months before she could go and see a vet behaviorist. Crazy, wow. Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do encourage them to talk to a vet at least about it and see if it's appropriate for their dog. So that's where I'm coming from. I certainly don't say, right, your dog's got anxiety, go and get drugs for it. I'm not that person, but I don't discourage it, and I do encourage them to go and talk to a vet at the very least. So that's my perspective on it.
I am that person. My basically first point of call with the clients is go see your vet and talk about anxiety medication. And I'm surprised by some people actually who do come back to me even the day before we actually start working together, and they've already got the dog on some medication ready for the day that we start, which quite often for them, or from the clients I've seen, quite often there's a much steadier progression with the ones that are on medication versus the ones that are not. I mean, just like you, Ness, I'm not into pushing medications onto people because everybody's got their own thoughts on what they want to do and what they don't want to do. But I can say that I do see better progression with the ones.
I always say to my clients, keep an open mind about it, because I mean, I do have clients who have already, before they come and see me, got their dogs on medication, and I've got the other ones that will say, I am never ever doing it. And to those ones, I always say, look, I understand where you are coming from, but just keep an open mind, go and talk to a vet, and just keep an open mind about it. We can start the training. If things aren't going as well as you would like, you know, the progression isn't as quick as you would like, then maybe it's a conversation you should have with your vet, and don't be closed-minded about it. Just you know, find out what your options are.
One of the first things that I ask the client to do is to talk to the vet, not necessarily to get medication, but just so the vet has a record of the dog having separation anxiety, and to kind of rule out any pain or any
factors
that
medical
could be contributing. Mm. Like, so I really like for them to see a vet at the beginning of working together. And I do like the vet to know the dog has separation anxiety, and to know that they're working with a trainer on it, even if we decide that we can wait a bit on meds. I don't think meds are a last resort. I mean, that's not how I picture them, but I also don't necessarily suggest that every client go on them right away. So I kind of, you know, work with them a bit. And if it seems like they're stalling out or plateauing and just like not getting anywhere with training, then a lot of times I will suggest that we revisit the meds. If a dog has a lot of other things going on, especially if they have like more generalized anxiety or noise phobias, then I'm more inclined to have that medication conversation earlier, because those do really affect training and the dog's overall happiness. Just for people who are not as familiar with the types of medication available for separation anxiety, shall we just not necessarily name brands of medication, but like just the categories of medication, you know, daily versus situational, and kind of explain those and how those might be used.
Sure. But also remembering that every country has got, like in terms of specific medications, every country's got different rules and guidelines around that, and what you can get in one, you can't get in the other.
Well, and that's kind of brings up another point is that, you know, as trainers, we're not veterinarians, right? So we haven't been, so we might see that certain medications are used more often in separation anxiety cases. And we might see, you know, have some anecdotal evidence as to, you know, what we feel like works better. But I really try to refrain from suggesting specific medications to my clients because, you know, their vet knows what other medical issues are happening in that specific dog and what might work best for that specific dog given those conditions. So while I will talk to my clients about classes of medication, I usually keep it very surface and let the vet handle that part of it because that's what they're trained to do.
Yeah, for sure.
So can you, Stacey, in the US, can you speak to vets about medication? Could you speak to a vet about a specific medication?
Could I? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I think there are some vets that a trainer might have an established relationship with, and then they could maybe have a conversation that way. But I wouldn't say to a client, go and ask your vet for fill in the blank. because that's, I think most vets would be offended by that. But if the if the vet and I were having a conversation and they said, what medications do you feel like might work best? And then we could, how about this because of this and this? And he would maybe say, no, because of this, or what about this? And, you know, we could have that conversation, but that's not necessarily a conversation I would have with a client. Basically, the two big categories of medication is daily medication, which would be for like more prolonged use. You give it to them daily, as the name would suggest. Mm-hmm. The benefits of it is that it stays in the system longer once it's in the system. So the drawback is that it can take 4 to 6, 8 weeks to be fully in the dog system. So, you know, there's a little bit of waiting to see if it's the right medication, the right dose for the dog. But then once it's in the system, you kind of have, you know, a nice leveling out of that brain chemistry. Yeah. I kind of think of it as filling in the gaps, you know, what the dog is lacking. It helps kind of fill in those gaps. Situational medication is for certain situations. So we mostly think of those like for
thunderstorm
dogs that are afraid of thunderstorms or fireworks, situations that we know are going to happen and that we know will trigger the dog. So those medications work usually within an hour or so, depending on the medication. And they last for a shorter amount of time once they're in the dog system. So generally, depending on the medication, but let's say like about 4 hours, right? So this type of medication can be, the situational medication is awesome because it works pretty much right away. And you know, in a very short time, whether the medication is going to work for your dog or not. So that's kind of a benefit. Sometimes the medications are combined. So your dog would be on a daily medication and a situational medication. And sometimes it's just one or the other.
So I actually printed out a part of a study, the use of medications in canine behavior therapy. And it's by Elana Reisner from the from Pennsylvania. She's from the ACVB Reisner Veterinary Behavior and Consulting Services.
We should link to that article.
You've read it from
2018, maybe. It's a tad old, and there might be like one or two newer medications out since then, but it's a really comprehensive article, and that is probably the article that I would direct people to if they were like, oh, I want to learn a little bit more so that when I talk to my vet, I feel a bit more informed. That was the one that I would point people to.
I might just run through some of the stuff that she's gotten here because I think it's really quite interesting. So in some cases, there are limits to how far behavior modification can go. So I guess for me, that would mean like if you were training with one of us, for example, a separation anxiety specialist, sometimes depending on the dog, there's only so far that training can go. An extreme situational, that she says, extreme situational stress or fear can interfere with learning and decision making. When dogs are overly reactive, or in the language of dog training, over threshold, they are physiologically aroused, which involves both the automatic fight or flight instincts and endocrine, hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis regulation systems. That was a mouthful. You guys, I think I did really well with that.
You did do. I was gonna like give you like a little cheer or something.
In these cases, there is really any middle ground, and the dog will move rapidly from lack of reaction to extreme avoidance, aggression, or panic. Well, obviously, in separation anxiety, we see the panic. Temperamental or inherited generalized anxiety can also interfere with learning. Generalized anxiety, similar to situational anxiety, is more pervasive and challenging to overcome through training alone, which is where medication comes in, obviously. In these patients, the addition of behavioral drug therapy can significantly improve response to treatment. While underlying anxiety is reduced, the dog is more receptive to learning and its behavior can change more reliably in the long term. And I think that's a really important point. So again, like you can train with us in separation anxiety, but sometimes you just have to have that extra layer of help to facilitate the training, which would be that medication.
Have you, Stacey, ever seen dogs that have had the opposite effect with the situational drugs, so the paradoxical effect where they, instead of becoming less anxious, they actually get worse?
Yeah, I have. I think it's more common. I think it can happen with the daily meds as well, but I think it's much more common with the situational. At least that's been my experience. The good news is then you can just stop giving it to them, right? Yeah. I mean, always under the guidance of your vet, but it's you can tell pretty quickly that the dog isn't doing well with the medication. And then so then you can take them off of it, you know. So it's not like they've been on it for so long and you have to wean them off. It's just like, oh, this isn't working. And I think that brings up another point is if you're gonna use situational meds, in conjunction with training, to always test that med out on your dog when you can be around your dog. Like, so don't just medication out the first time and then leave your dog or leave them at daycare or leave them at a friend's house, because if they do have, kind of a negative response to the meds, then you're not there to help pick up the pieces.
It's a good point. The other thing I would like to add, and just not in terms of situational, but in terms of the longer term drugs, is for the people that are, did you see a nose then? For the people that, if anybody's listening to this, we're doing this, recording this on Zoom, and my dog's nose just appeared on the screen. So anyway, so people that are worried about having their dog, for people that are worried about having their dog on drugs, medication, shouldn't call it drugs, should we? Doesn't have to be forever, right? So once the training is ongoing and the dog can cope with being home alone, then you can gradually decrease the drugs, and hopefully that will be it. One hopes. Would you guys agree with that?
Definitely. I think a lot of people worry that they're going to have to put the dog on medication for life. But as you said, it's not the case. I mean, I think on average, it's probably somewhere between 6 months and a year. I wouldn't take them off them too quickly. But there are a lot of dogs that quite happily come off medication and go forward from there quite happy staying home alone.
And the other thing I think is if you go to your vet And they really say, I don't believe in giving dogs medication for this kind of anxiety. Why don't you try something else? Let's try all these options first. Then maybe, and you really feel that your dog needs it because you're the one at home, coming home to a dog that's soiling the house and or destroying all your belongings. Then perhaps it's a case of finding another vet.
If you love your vet, but y'all just don't see eye to eye.
That's awesome.
You both don't see things eye to eye in that regard. It's not like you need to leave your vet. You can just get a second opinion for that.
So you don't have to break up with your vet.
You don't have to break up. All you do is seek a second opinion. And if you're going to seek a second opinion, I would, you can go to a vet behaviorist, like Ness said, if you can afford one and if you can get in on the calendar. But if not, there are a lot of vets who are behaviorally savvy. You know, that's kind of their specialty or a point of interest for them. So, you know, if you're going out of your way to see another vet, to seek another opinion, seek an opinion from a vet who is especially knowledgeable in that area.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I think it also depends on the size of the practice. If you've got a vet practice that's big enough, you could probably speak to another vet within the practice rather than have to leave altogether. It's just a case of finding the right vet. And like Stacey said, using another vet just for that particular reason and then going back to your original vet for all the other things, I don't think they'd mind that. And the vet behaviourist, I mean, here in the UK, I think there's probably only about 10 in the entire country.
Yeah, right.
I mean, granted, of course, compared to you guys, England is about, the UK is about 2 inches tall, but it's still...
Your population, I mean, I think our population compared to your population is, you should have more...
We should, yeah. And I think it's also a common misconception here in the UK that in order to get behavioural medication that you need to see a vet behaviourist, because you don't. You know, you can a normal vet here in the UK can prescribe behavioural or anxiety medication, no problem. And I think that's where we get a lot of problems over here, is people being told, because the vet's uncomfortable prescribing something, rather than the vet saying to them, seek the opinion of another vet, they'll say to them, go find a vet behaviourist. And then we have the same problem that you have, Ness, where they're waiting for, 3 and 4 months. And that's if they've got one that's within, 100 miles.
The other thing to bring up is that sometimes a vet behaviourist will do a consult with your vet about your case as a pet owner. And it will cost less and the calendar might be more open because it's not such a big chunk of time. The vet and vet behaviorist can kind of talk in shorthand. So that could be another option depending on the situation.
Just made me think, Stacey, I have actually got a local veterinary behaviorist who's just come over from Australia, Vanessa.
Oh, gosh. We need them over here, not over there.
I know. You've lost one, we've gained one. Thank you.
Fine.
What do you guys think about puppies? Puppies on medication.
I'm okay. I mean, I'll go there. Going on the research that I've seen, they put children on the type of drugs that we're talking about putting dogs on for anxiety. So if they're safe for your 5, 6, 7, 8 year old to go on, then I should, they're good for your puppies. They're well tested and they're well researched. And the problem with a lot of the behaviours that we're looking at is the more that they are practiced and the more that the dog lives with them, the more embedded they become and the more the brain synapses and neurons and all these things get set into a certain pattern. So if you can disrupt that, I was just going to say as a child, I mean, as a puppy, if you can disrupt that while they're still young, the chances are that you're going to get a cracking outcome with a dog that hopefully should get to adulthood and leave all the anxiety behind. So for me, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't wait.
Yeah. I think in addition to the studies on human children that you're talking about. I think there was also studies that I think Karen Overall did them on rats and the medication during that, what are rat babies called? Ratlings? What are rat babies called? Baby rats. Do they have a name?
Are they called
ratlings? I like ratlings. They're pups.
Yes, pups. I think they're pups. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just think like the ones that are tiny, still in their
ratlings.
I think ratlings is much better.
Yeah.
When the medication was given to the baby rats versus not, you know, like when the medication wasn't given to the baby rats, the behaviors kind of stuck into adulthood, and there were actual changes in the brain, permanent changes in the brain. So, you know, like Karen Overall is a big proponent of giving puppies medication, but there are some vets who feel like, oh, well, the brain is still developing, so we shouldn't give medication. And they like to wait till about a year old at least. But I'm kind of with, like, because the brain is developing, I think it's so important that we don't strengthen those connections that you were talking about, Sarah, and create kind of those like ruts for those bad experiences and bad feelings.
Definitely. I mean, I would definitely go that way. And I think having seen some younger dogs that have gone onto medication at sort of like 20, 25 weeks and had a good outcome, then, you know, there's nothing so far that I've seen that would dissuade me from that.
Right. Let's move on and talk. We kind of already talked a little bit about side effects. Sarah, did you have anything more to say about some of the unattended side effects of medication?
Just that I think with the therapeutic medication, the ones that they take every day, that the side effects can often be mitigated by a lower dose. So if you do get side effects with your dog, so a lot of them seem to have effects on appetite or make the dog slightly lethargic. If you go back to your vet and ask them to adjust the dose, that can quite often help with side effects. And that with all things, that generally the side effects will pass. So even if you do have a couple of weeks where your dog's slightly more lethargic than normal, the chances are that, you know, in a few weeks' time, they'll be bouncing around like the general fruit loop they've already been for the last however long. So not to worry about it too much.
Yeah.
It means the medication's working.
I've noticed that too, is that some vets will start with like kind of a lower loading dose for a couple weeks and then increase to a more therapeutic dose, and then so that specifically for that reason, to minimize the side effect, the unattended side effects. But then other vets just go with the full dose in the beginning, I guess to reduce the amount of time it takes for the medication to be fully in the dog system, right? So there's kind of two ways to thinking about it. And you know, I don't know if there's a ton of research on doing it one way or the other, or any research, but there are two ways to do it. So if you are experiencing one way or the other with your vet, both of them are acceptable. And I think the biggest thing is to keep an open line of communication with your vet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure with the loading dose. I mean, to me, it feels like something that's fairly new. I don't seem to remember hearing much about it a few years ago, whereas all of a sudden over the last sort of year or two, there's definitely been more people that I've heard of who the vets have given them a much smaller dose to start with to help with the side effects. So hopefully with the vets that are still not quite getting there, that they will, you know, come on board at some point. That's the way that's the feeling I get of it over here. I'm not so sure over there or with you, Vanessa.
Right.
Mm.
So I think the only thing on kind of my list of things that I was jotting down as we were preparing for the podcast is, like, what if it doesn't work? What's your next step?
Well, honestly, go back to the vet and get the dosage looked at or the medication looked at, because not every medication is appropriate for every dog. It just depends. So, yeah.
Right.
It right. could just be a case of changing the medication or changing the dosage.
Yeah. And there's a lot is only... Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, so and there's a lot of medications out there. There's probably a lot more than you think.
Mm.
Yeah. Right, right. And there's always the option of pairing that medication with another, because sometimes... And this is where I think it's really important to get with a super up-to-date and knowledgeable vet behaviorist if... you know, they're pairing different medications, because I've had instances like where the one medication didn't really work on its own that well, but they lowered it and paired it with another medication. And then together they just really worked well, you know, so it can kind of, you're gearing it towards your dog. So if there's not a automatic formula out there, there's just, so somebody who's knowledgeable in meds could definitely help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
What difference do you think? We talked about how medications alone really aren't going to do the trick, and that it's important to pair it with training. What differences do you think medications bring to the table? Like, what should people expect to see to know that their medication is working? Their dog's medication is working.
I have got some clients who wear both them and the dog are on the same medication.
That's great. That's great. Mental health for everybody.
I think it's a funny one. I mean, I was always told that with certainly with some of the anti-anxiety medications that they can take up to sort of 12 or more weeks before they actually kick in. But then when they do kick in, that for some of them, it's a very, very, very subtle effect. It's not, so what you would see is if you've got a dog that's kind of got some general anxiety along with the separation anxiety, that when they become aroused, their arousal level or the going over threshold level or whatever you want to call it, the, you know, barking and shouting at something, they're coming back down from that should be a lot faster than it was before. So you should mm-hmm. see that kind of thing. You should
right,
see.
Right. Yeah. I think in addition to the recovery time, like you're talking about, the actual, I don't know if outburst, but I'm using the word outburst here but the behaviors that you're seeing are less, yeah. I think, in a lot of dogs, right? And then another thing I think is their threshold to get to the, you know, to, they have a bigger threshold, but I'm not saying that right, but you know what I mean? Like they've got more cushion there before they go over a threshold.
Yeah.
So I think those three things, but I think specifically with separation anxiety training, I do think that the biggest thing that I see when the meds are working correctly is just the consistency. I think you still have to go through the steps of training and it's still a marathon, not a sprint, but I don't see as many ups and downs in the training when the dog is on medications that are like a great fit for them. What about you guys?
Just on that point, I think we said this earlier, but medication alone isn't going to be the cure-all. So you have to do it hand in hand with the training.
Yeah, I think the medication should be an adjunct, shouldn't it? So basically it means that it gives you an opportunity to do some training with a dog that's hopefully less anxious. So you do find, I think, like you said, Stacey, that the separation anxiety training tends to go that little bit smoother. You tend to go up the durations and things that little bit easier. They tend to progress a little bit faster. And I think that's the whole idea, isn't it, is that they work together. Mm. And like you said, it's never going to work all on its own. You wouldn't be able to just give them one of these drugs and then go, yeah, fine, we'll leave you for 4 hours.
Harking back to that study that I was talking about earlier, I did one of the owners that had been on a certain drug for a couple of months. I like this. It's a quote that they said. They said, "I feel like it's opened a door to her brain." Mm. So if you look at it like that and then you put it, team it with the actual training, then once that door's open, the training can just go a lot more smoothly.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. I love that quote, actually.
Yeah, I do too. That's great.
Here in the UK, if you get a prescription medication from your vet, you can buy the prescription itself from the vet and then go and buy the actual medication online, as opposed to having to spend a fortune with the vets, because our medications here, if they are specifically for animals, they cost an absolute fortune, even though it's the same medication that you would use for a human, because it's now over here, they have to be licensed for animals. It does really does push the cost up. What's the general rules for things like that in Australia and America?
I believe you can do that, but I am not 100% sure, so I can't really answer that for sure.
Yeah, so you can here, you can do that. And even if you go to one of the, you can go to people pharmacies and get perhaps a generic form of the medication. So it wouldn't be like a beef flavored chew or, you know, like some of them are like flavored. So it wouldn't be that, but it would be like a generic form of the medication. So that's a possibility. The other, or, you know, a pill, it's just a regular pill. The other possibility is that there are some inexpensive but trusted dog, you can get dog food and dog toys and like pet, like it's like a pet store but online, and they'll have a pharmacy as well, and they will frequently be a heck of a lot cheaper than getting them directly from your vet, just because of the quantity that moves through, you know, a big website like that, they can get it for a discounted rate and pass the savings on to you. So that's I never get medication from directly from the vet, just because it's so much more expensive.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
Don't you have compound pharmacies in the US as well?
We have them. Yeah. Do you have them in England?
No.
You don't?
No. So you guys have gone.
Well, I don't know if our compound pharmacies would cater to dogs. I don't know.
I think, does it depend on the medication? Because I know that obviously here, if it's a specific animal medication, then you can get it from one of these online, you know, like you say, Stacey, this sort of like online pet places. But if it's a human medication that's not licensed for animals, but the vet's using it off license, then you can get it from a human pharmacy, which is generally when it costs you peanuts. But we don't have this. I've heard people talk about, certainly in the USA, about compound pharmacies where they can make the capsule or whatever it is that you need, the dose that you need, rather than buying a dose that's maybe bigger and you having to split it or whatever you might do.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Yeah.
So are we done with prescription medication?
Because so, and I think that due to kind of like our time,
yes, and this is what I was going to say, part two
for the
I think that's definitely one on its own, is that, because that's just a bigger subject. Yeah. as the,
and Sarah, you probably need to go to bed, hey, what time is it over there?
And I need to go and watch First Married at First Sight Australia.
Oh, for goodness sakes. What a load of rubbish.
They're all crazy. It concerns me, Vanessa. It really does.
I don't watch it, so I can't comment. Sarah, there is something we do have to discuss. We used to have a monkey on the show. Now they have left us, which is so what animal noise can you bring to the party? Stacey's got an elephant. I can do a lovely little kitty cat.
I haven't heard your kitty cat.
I think you should do that first. Stacey, do that again. It didn't come out.
Does that not come out?
No.
It's that mic thing that we did. Like if it takes it out as a background noise.
Yes. Yep. It's not coming out.
Okay, let me do this. Was that a cow I heard?
No, it was me groaning.
Well, that could be a cow.
It could have been a cow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cowish. No, my elephant, okay. No? Yeah?
Yeah, no, good.
Yeah.
There it is.
Okay, so it's definitely
Yeah.
It's just like being in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Still waiting for Vanessa's kitty cat. Oh, there he was.
Okay, and what's yours other than a cow, Sarah?
Okay, I think we have to now. Can you guess the animal?
Duck. A duck?
Yeah. Duck.
I preferred the cow, actually, I must say. I thought the cow
was
great.
Did you hear my chickens? And that's a direct impression of my chickens that I've got in the garden.
Oh, it was a chicken? I thought it was a duck. Okay, sorry.
No, everyone's missed my chickens.
You know, and some fell on stony ground.
Okay.
Have you ever had guinea fowl?
No. My friend's got guinea fowl in a field behind her house. They're all rescue ones, and she's got about 10 of them. And they always remind me of the Women's Institute. They're always charging around with their handbags, shouting at things. Like the Women's Institute.
So loud. We used to have some when we first moved to this property that we're on now. It was like really overgrown, lots of ticks and everything. So we got the guinea fowl because they're really good at controlling that. And oh my gosh, they're so loud and dramatic. I'm gonna go with dramatic.
Super dramatic. I remember I watched them once, a hen landed in the field, and I've never seen anything like it. They were all off. They were like supercharged soldiers, all going to get rid of this. Yeah, crazy little birds.
They're like watch
dogs.
Watch fowls.
I must say though, the chickens are pretty much like that. I mean, when they do tend to gang up on Ernie, because they're ex-battery hens, so they're big. I mean, they're
Ernie being your dog.
Say that again.
Ernie being your dog.
Yeah, so Ernie's a toy poodle, so he's like 6 kilos. He's like, you know, teeny tiny fluff, and these walking footballs with feathers, they all gang up on him, and I quite often find him. I can feel him squashing against my legs, and I'll turn around and he's got like 4 chickens all around him, all beady eyed at him. They intimidate him for the chronic.
Right, well, let's wrap up for this week. We'll do part 2 next week on natural medications. Thank you so much for listening to Tales from the Doghouse, and thank you, Sarah, for joining us for your very first episode. We're very pleased to have you. If you like us, please subscribe on your favorite listening app and give us a 5-star review. It would be lovely. What do you think, girls? Should we say goodbye?
Goodbye.
See ya. Bye.